from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugarland, Texas, where life truly is sweeter, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, November the 28th, 2023. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started the right way with...
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. It says here, love is a canvas furnished by nature and embroidered by imagination. I like that. And after you've raised your kids, you'll have a beautiful quilt and hopefully a little money left over for traveling.
You're gonna end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the podcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do it.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history. Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh, I know.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
If you say so.
You might be quizzed.
Alrighty, kids, on this day in 1895, the first American automobile race took place over the 54 miles from Chicago's Jackson Park up to Evanston, Illinois. And Frank Duryea won in approximately 10 hours. Or about the same time it takes to drive that route today in Chicago traffic. Yeah. And it was on this day in 1925, the Grand Ole Opry began broadcasting in Nashville as the WSM Barn Dance. Yeah, in those days, old people warned that that kind of music was a passing fad and the radio show was doomed. Happy 98th anniversary, you guys.
Thank you so much for your support of this channel.
Allow me to remind you that a lot can happen. I mean, a lot. Between now and 11 months from now. Because 11 months from now, the election will be held. And I'm not even sure there's going to be a Biden-Harris ticket. I'm very doubtful that Joe Biden's going to be on the ticket. And if he's not on the ticket, certainly Harris won't be. In fact, she has some problems of her own right now. She continues to burn through staff. Reports are coming out all over the place saying that she's struggling to keep top talent. Nobody wants to work for her. Now, her office, and this is nothing new, but her office has been plagued with turnover and more than a dozen high-profile aides have left. But the problem seems to be, at least according to former staffers, people just don't like working for her. You know, it's just, it's a lot like the situation with Sheila Jackson Lee. Anyhow, Politico reported that Kamala Harris's office was often rife with dissent, was even described as being not a healthy environment. They say just last year she saw the exodus of her main domestic policy advisor while her chief speechwriter departed after fewer than 4 months on the job. It was hardly surprising, given that a year earlier, Politico reported that her office was rife with dissent. The problem was so great that even President Joe Biden's team took notice. Now, there's a news outlet out there called 1945, and they looked into it, too. And they said, people are thrown under the bus from very top. There are short fuses, and it's an abusive environment. Again, reminds me of Sheila Jackson Lee. What is it? Is it a thing with women of color? I don't think so. Just coincidental. But why is this allowed to persist? A person with direct knowledge of how Harris's office is run told Politico in June of 2021, it's not a healthy environment and people often feel mistreated. It's not a place where people feel supported, but a place where people feel treated like, and you can fill in the blank there. Anyhow, the Washington Post published a lengthy report detailing turmoil inside Harris's circle, with staffers describing her management style as horrifyingly bad. Now, where does your imagination take you when somebody uses that term for a description? Horrifyingly bad. Wow. Former staffer said, "It's clear that you're not working with somebody willing to do the prep and the work. With Kamala, you have to put up with a constant amount of soul-destroying criticism and also her lack of confidence. So you're constantly sort of propping up a bully, and it's not clear why." Isn't that interesting? I mean, I suspected she had a bad situation going there because this is certainly not the first time that it's been suggested that there are problems in her office. But this particular description, it's clear that you're not working with somebody willing to do the prep and the work. With Kamala, you have to put up with a constant amount of soul-destroying criticism and also her lack of confidence. So you're constantly sort of propping up a bully, and it's not clear why. Do you know what this is? I speak from experience. This is indicative of a sociopath. And I wonder if maybe she's bipolar as well. Now, I haven't had direct contact with her. I couldn't run a diagnosis, nor am I licensed to. But I have had experience in my 62 years of radio. And, you know, I've been very lucky in my radio career. Out of all of those years, I only had two really bad bosses. Only two. The rest of my bosses were really cool people, and I've been very blessed in that regard. But one boss that I had in particular displayed all these traits that are being described in reference to Kamala Harris. I had one boss who was a sociopath, and he was bipolar. And boy, that made things difficult all the way around. So anyhow, all of this comes as reports are circulating that there's rising tension in the White House between Biden and Harris. Now, you look at Biden, he's 80 now. Anybody would have to have their head where the sun doesn't shine not to acknowledge that he is showing signs of his age, and it's a problem that more Democrat voters are considering as he runs for re-election. I bet if you went out there among Democrat voters, people who habitually vote Democrat, if you went out to them and you ask them, do you want Joe Biden to run again or do you want somebody else? They tell you they want somebody else. Clearly, in this respect, the American people's wishes are not being acknowledged. And I think we all know why this is the case, why they're still trying to push for Biden to run for re-election, because Barack Obama is running the White House. And with anybody other than Joe Biden in the White House, Obama will not have control. He will not retain control of the White House. And quite frankly, that's one bastard who needs to be put away. Put him in a rubber room somewhere in a maximum security prison. It's taking on the appearance that a lot of Democrats' concern is that in case he becomes incapacitated and can no longer serve, or worse, should he pass away while in office, that would mean Kamala Harris becomes president. And believe me, that's not something most Americans in either party want to see, right? And according to a new survey, she is so unpopular that she's seen now as harming Biden's re-election chances. Certainly nothing hard to understand there. The Washington Examiner reported when Rasmussen Reports asked likely voters, is she doing a better job or worse job than most previous vice presidents? Her poor showing demonstrated why some Democrats and liberal media outlets are urging Biden to replace her on his re-election ticket. According to the new survey shared with Secrets Wednesday, that's the name of the outfit, 50% said she's worse than most previous vice presidents, 22% said better, and 24% saw no difference. And, you know, people who see no difference, of course, they're just not politically active. They have their heads somewhere else. Now, the contrast might hold significance for Biden's potential re-election bid, of course. Rasmussen conducted the survey to gauge whether the former California senator's influence is beneficial or detrimental to his his to Biden's prospects. And the results indicate that by a margin of 33% to 22%, voters perceive her impact as more negative than positive. Importantly, and potentially more damaging to her image, 41% of respondents expressed the view that Harris had no discernible impact whatsoever. Jeez. Which leads you to question, if Biden were to just drop dead, I mean, what would happen then? Well, yeah, naturally, Obama would continue to run the show. Now, earlier this week, according to conservativebrief.com, George Skelton, a longtime political columnist for the Los Angeles Times, wrote that Biden should replace Harris now so she can return to California and take lame duck Senator Dianne Feinstein's seat. Really? Oh, man. He wrote, quote, "Biden's problem is Harris. She's a burden, a drag on his reelection prospects." He added, "A reader emailed me with a remedy. Feinstein could resign from the Senate. Governor Gavin Newsom could appoint Harris to replace her. Biden then could find more popular running mate, one more acceptable to voters as a potential successor." You know, this is all ludicrous, though. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous. Because any equation that includes Joe Biden after this term is up is just sheer nonsense. It's not the first time the suggestion's been made either. Remember John Zogby, a Democrat pollster? He likes Biden for some reason. He said the same thing in a recent podcast, according to the Examiner. But Biden appears to have no plans to replace her. In fact, just recently in a memo he wrote, or that someone wrote for him, okay, he said that picking Harris as his running mate was one of the best decisions I made, and that she remains the perfect choice. Really, where are my hip waders? Now, a shift in roles could potentially alter the way voters perceive Harris. Rasmussen's data indicates that her favorability ratings are underwater. According to the recent survey, 42% hold a favorable opinion of the vice president, whereas 53% view her unfavorably. Not good. And Rasmussen discussed the bottom line regarding Harris, saying, "Most voters continue to have a low opinion of Vice President Kamala Harris and don't see her as a helpful running mate for President Joe Biden's 2024 reelection campaign." The fact that there even is a 2024 Biden reelection campaign has me scratching my head. What the hell is wrong with our country? We have our usual contingent of lefties. We have those people who straddle the fence between left and right. We have our politically active boneheads who like to go out in the streets and demonstrate about anything and everything. It could be the environment. It could be politics. It could be demonstrating against Israel. And, you know, so many of these people really are not fully informed about the topics that they're demonstrating either for or against. They're just out there demonstrating because that's what they want to do. And you look at the polling, and it looks like Donald Trump is a shoo-in for the White House in 2024. But yet we don't know who's going to be running against him. I can pretty much assure you it will not be Joe Biden. I mean, he's clearly been losing his marbles at an even a more increasing rate, okay? And this is kind of scary because we don't know who the Democrats are going to put up against Trump. And Slick Newsom out of California, he's already made it pretty clear he wants to run. He wants to go up against whoever the Republicans have. And I mean, you know, come on. Show me a scenario where somebody other than Donald Trump is going to be, I mean, and don't worry about all these court cases. What was that joke he made about a week ago? He's been getting plenty of exercise running up and down the steps of all these courthouses all over the country. It was a good line, very good line, and very accurate. I don't think there was any exaggeration there in that one. But I really don't see a scenario where anybody other than Donald Trump is going to be running on the GOP ticket in 24. Now, you take Gavin Newsom, who, he's a slick talker. And, you know, your pinheads who vote according to who's better looking are going to vote for slick Newsom without any knowledge whatsoever of his track record as governor of California, with no knowledge whatsoever of what his true platform is. And you know Newsom, he's going to push even harder for EVs and electric everything. He's going to outlaw your gas stoves, your gas-powered automobile. He's going to outlaw your air conditioning. I mean, these are things that he's going to champion, whether he's going to succeed in doing it or not. But, you know, when you have somebody like that on the left who's trying to follow this ill-conceived idea about the environment, even though they're not succeeding, their campaign costs us. Look what we're paying now for gasoline. Look what we're paying now for our food. Just general transportation of goods and services. Those costs are way up, and they're going to stay way up. Look at your utility bills. Those costs are way up, and they're going to stay up. Because you have these idiots on the left who have no knowledge whatsoever about environmental scientists, or I'm sorry, environmental sciences. They have no knowledge in that regard whatsoever. And they listen to these charlatans who are aligned with the World Economic Forum. And the World these people in the World Economic Forum are well aware of the fact that if they're going to sink the free enterprise system, if they're going to sink the free Western world, the only way they're going to do it is by hijacking the entire environmental agenda and implementing rules, not even laws, just rules. There's a difference. But they're going to enact rules that member nations are going to have to follow. And then you got a pinhead like Gavin Newsom who's going to want to make the United States a member nation of this agenda. The World Economic Forum, The Great Reset. If you haven't read The Great Reset by Glenn Beck yet, do it! It could save your family's lives. Seriously. I mean, if a family can't support itself, and wages are not keeping up with inflation, inflation is running away on a number of fronts. A small part of it has to do with the environmental agenda. The bigger part of it is all the money that we're printing because we're giving so much money to Ukraine. Still giving money to Iran. Good Lord. And this mismanagement has just gone totally haywire. And my problem isn't with, it's not as much with the Republicans. I do have a problem with the Republicans. Ronna Romney McDaniel should have been replaced. She needs to be replaced. I mean, Mitt Romney, what's that, her uncle? He has already announced he plans to vote for Biden. If it's a repeat of 2020, he plans to vote for Biden. Mitt Romney should be publicly kicked in the ass by somebody with sharp-toed boots. I got a pair of Dan Post boots. You can borrow those. But Mitt Romney should be dragged into a public square, forced to bend over, and have his ass kicked. Pardon the language, but that's how angry I am with Mitt Romney. What a pinhead. Gee whiz. So these clowns in the Republican Party who are clearly rhinos are not helping us whatsoever. They're not helping the country at all. Frankly, they should be expelled from the Republican Party. It's not going to happen, but they should be. And good God, get rid of Mitch McConnell. He too. He's I don't know that he's senile so much, but he does have some serious problems, serious medical problems. And those need to be addressed he's not helping the country. When I see all these dangerous people, though, who've had such immense power in our government, like Nancy Pelosi, thank God she's no longer Speaker of the House. The woman is a complete and total nutcase. That just tells me one thing. Voters are not paying attention. They're not taking the time to get to know the candidates. So they go into the booth and they pull the lever or punch the ticket, whatever method they use in their precinct. And they go strictly on either one of two things. Name recognition. Oh, I know this guy. Okay, I've heard this guy's name before. Or who's the better looking candidate? And that goes both ways, male and female. I mean, voters should be required to show some proficiency when it comes to voting. But that's not required. Never will be. That's not the way we operate as a nation. And that's part of what I'm afraid of. But if Donald Trump regains the White House in 2024, should the American people fear him? Or should they fear the radical leftists, who are probably among the most ill-informed citizens on our soil? Should we fear them and that temper tantrum that they're likely to unleash on us when Donald Trump is re-elected? Oh man, you're going to see BLM again. You're going to see Antifa all over the place. There's going to be more rioting. There's going to be more fires. Only this time, I believe Donald Trump is prepared to handle this crap. But if you don't live in the suburbs, if you live in an urban center somewhere, you might want to be watchful. Because when these people are angry enough, they're liable to do darned near anything. And I hasten to add here at this point, too, while I'm on this rant, do not rule out the possibility that the angry extreme left will go to some great extents to try to assassinate Donald Trump. I mean, we don't need to fear Donald Trump. Donald Trump will get in office and yeah, he's gonna clean house. He claims he's gonna clean house. He's gonna get some retribution, although some retribution is certainly called for. Don't discount that part of the equation. There is some retribution that is called for. I got some names I'd like to have retribution on. You know? My God, Adam Schiff. And, what's his name? The guy who was sleeping with the Chinese spy. I mean, this is... Nobody utters the word treason anymore. Nobody in within our judicial system suggests that treason actually has been committed. And it has been. We've seen it. Look what Joe Biden's been doing. That's treasonous. But nobody's willing to come forth and make the charges official. At least they're trying impeachment. I'll settle for that. But I don't know if Donald Trump is reelected this time next year. We all need to be on the lookout for the immense nuclear temper tantrum that the left is going to be throwing. It's going to make the summer of 2020 look very pale in comparison. Just revealed by our friends at the Epoch Times, a powerful United Nations agency has unveiled a plan to regulate social media and online communication while cracking down on what it describes as false information and conspiracy theories, sparking, a lot of alarm among free speech advocates like myself and top U.S. lawmakers. Here again, who's going to be the judge of what is or isn't misinformation? Now, in its 59-page report released this month, the UN Educational, Cultural, and Scientific Organization, you may know them as UNESCO. Okay, yeah, that's them. Well, they outlined a series of concrete measures which must, and I'm going to put this in quotes, concrete measures which must be implemented by all stakeholders, governments, regulatory authorities, civil society, and the platforms themselves, end quote. This is spooky. Now, this approach includes the imposition of global policies through institutions like governments and businesses, designed to stop the spread of various forms of speech while promoting objectives like cultural diversity and gender equality. My God, weren't we just down this road a year or two ago? Well, here we go again. And in particular, the UN agency claims to create an internet of trust by targeting what it calls misinformation, disinformation, hate speech, and conspiracy theories. Wow. Now, examples of expression flagged to be stopped or restricted include concerns about elections, public health measures, and advocacy that could constitute incitement to discrimination. Yep, we were just down this road in 2020, weren't we? And critics are warning that allegations of disinformation and conspiracy theories have increasingly been used by powerful forces in government and big tech to silence true information and even core political speech. And this is why my shorts are in a wad right now. Just this month, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee released a report blasting the pseudoscience of disinformation. Thank goodness. Among other concerns, the committee found this pseudoscience has been weaponized by what lawmakers refer to as the censorship industrial complex. Great name for it. I love that. The censorship industrial complex. The goal? Silence constitutionally protected political speech, mostly by conservatives. They're not fooling anybody. They're not fooling a single one of us. They're saying that the pseudoscience of disinformation is now, and has always been, nothing more than a political ruse, most frequently targeted at communities and individuals holding views contrary to the prevailing narratives. This is according to the congressional report. The weaponization of disinformation, pseudo-experts, and bureaucrats. A congressional report is saying this. Wow. Suddenly I'm starting to gain a little faith in our political system here after all. To the Comedy Corner now with Pete Jr.
I'm remarried. You know, it's a normal marriage. You know, we bicker about normal things. Like, she doesn't like the way I drive, which I think a lot of women don't like the way their husbands drive. And to be fair, I looked into this. It's because we crash way more. That's why our insurance premiums are higher. And it's the direct result of an overconfidence behind the wheel. Because, guys, we're so dumb, when we spin out of control, all the way up until the actual moment of impact, we're like, I can save it. We can't, but we think. And I've crashed quite a bit of vehicles. I'm not bragging. But going through that a few times, you know, you learn how to stay calm. You know, you don't panic. You get used to it. But one of the cars I crashed, I had some ladies in the vehicle. And you could tell they weren't used to it at all. Because they made a lot of noise. We're halfway through this unplanned 360 on the freeway. They are freaking out. I'm like, ladies, relax. This happens all the time. So I get it. You know, we've earned our reputation. I get why you're nervous. But that being said, ladies, you're not perfect. You're not batting a thousand. Because one time I was in the car with my wife. She's driving. I'm in the passenger seat. We're coming up to an intersection, and we need to turn left. And there's a semi coming, and the light turned yellow. Nothing suggested this semi was about to stop. As a matter of fact, I think it sped up to make the light. And what did my darling do? Turned right in front of this thing. And right away, I was like, I'm gonna die. This is it. This is how I go. And did I panic? No. My training kicked in. Little did my wife know, I've been preparing for this moment for years. No, what did I do? I reached for the I'm about to crash and die handle, pressed my other hand up against the ceiling, pressed my back really firm against the cushion, and hit that imaginary brake pedal with my foot. I was like, oh no, oh no. This thing swerves on a dime. It misses us by inches, goes barreling into the gutter, almost took out a tree. The craziest thing I've ever seen happen, immediately afterwards, she turned to me and went, I can't believe you did that. That didn't help me.
That'll do it. Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.